Episode 25. Here we go. That feels like a milestone, 25. I don't know. Quarter life crisis happening with this podcast. Get on board. If you're tuning in for the first time, welcome. I don't know where you've been for 25 episodes, but here we are, episode 25. And this is a great episode. The episodes keep getting better. I'm telling you, the evolution of this podcast has been amazing to watch. I mean, we started out so strong, and they're unbelievable right now. I mean, we're in such a good place. We're finding our flow. I mean, everything. I mean, I couldn't be more excited for what's happening here. This is an incredible show. And, you know, tell your friends. I mean, I want them listening. Today, Fillmore. I mean, Fillmore is one of those artists that is in a special ranking of artists that are one-name artists. I'm talking about Bono. I'm talking about Prince. I'm talking about Madonna. I mean, Beyonce. I mean, this is a big torch to hold the one-name artist. And I think Fillmore is holding it. This was a great conversation. You know, I've known about Fillmore for a while. He's got a lot of buzz around town, and the music's great. And I've heard his name, and I've seen him live. I get the deal. Like I get it. I mean, he's so good. But moments like this, I walked in feeling one way, and I left being a true fan. I was so blown away by this conversation. I had so much fun talking with Fillmore. Such a cool, nice guy. And I can't wait for you guys to hear this episode. I don't want to give too much away. I just want to get into it. Here we go. Episode 25, Fillmore. Let's go.
I would love, thank you. I would also love to say that my computer was dead, and that never happens because I just woke up recently because I partied way too hard on release night. So I'm
fantastic. Okay, so quarantine partying, what does that look like?
It's basically a back porch with a fire pit out here, and then you just have people socially distanced hanging and like looking at each other, but it was fine.
And I missed my invite. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. If you would have done this yesterday, you would have been here. You know, like, I'm so sorry.
Okay, fair enough. Well, but
you guys to it, to do your thing.
All right, brother.
I just wanted to say, hey.
I love it.
No more.
Zach, hey, happy release day to you too, man. We've worked hard for this, brother.
Yeah, buddy.
And right. So how's the response been? Your new music Friday, right? Huge. Have people been blowing up your phone this morning? What's the response been?
I can't even like look at my phone. And like I just said, like I just woke up like 30 minutes ago, and I decided to drive downtown. I'm like 8 minutes from downtown, so I just drove down and checked out all my banners that are everywhere, which is so cool, like the billboards and stuff. So I was like, it was awesome.
Okay, hold on. Now that's a little conflicting because I've read that you don't have a car. You haven't had a car in years.
I don't.
Is this your fiance's car? Who's driving here?
She drove me. Also, I don't know if I was sober enough to drive either way, but yeah, she drove me. So yeah, I still don't have a car. That's all true. She works tonight at 5. She works at the hospital at St. Thomas West. She works weekends. So like when I was on tour, I'd be gone every weekend, like, you know, Wednesday through Sunday, and she would work weekends. And then when I came back, like that was our weekend together because we'd have like 2 days or 3 days at home and like be able to hang out. So we like set it that way. But like a day like today, you know, like use your car, which, you know, so I don't have a car, but like I can borrow one. So it's not bad.
Do you have a license? Did you ever learn how to drive, or you just?
Yeah. Yeah. I've only owned Jeep Wranglers. I've had three. I sold the one that like helped me build this entire process, which I'd put like 16 grand into it and then sold it to buy my master's. That's all true. Everything. I had my license. In the van days before we got the bus in 2019, like I was the guy driving 24 hours through the middle of the night, then playing the show and driving the guys back, just so like you want to make it easier for your band and everyone that works for you, like trying to be like a good boss. So yes, I drive very well, but I also, until quarantine happened, I will say I don't think I felt like I really needed a car because I was never here. I think I'd just be sitting here. But now during quarantine, I'm like, I would love to have a car, but then you're like, where do I go? Because you can't go anywhere anyway. So it's like, it's a double-edged sword still. It's going to happen one day where I get one, but I don't know yet.
I didn't have a car for 2 years living in Nashville, and everyone would make fun of me and think I was crazy. I grew up in New York, so I grew up riding the subway. I had my license technically, but I never like really learned how. I'm not a great driver, but I just got a car during quarantine. So there you go.
Congrats, man. I love it. That's awesome.
Huge. So tell me about, I mean, you're like one of those artists that's been building it kind of like that classic rock way, even though we're in country, but you know, you've been building that fan base since day one. Since you were in college, you started playing shows. Yeah. How did those early shows come together? That first band that you formed, what were some of those early shows like?
They were like lunches. They're like lunch cafeteria shows at colleges in the middle of like the Northeast. It was really a lot in the Northeast though, because those colleges are so close to each other. So you could fly in and you could play numerous shows in a row and make a lot of money because the colleges are so close to each other. And so like, that's called the NACA circuit. And you would just basically, I got lucky with that situation. And it was like all these colleges have an entertainment fund and then they pay you to like, so it was a good way to like work up your chops and like make really good money. And I did that on the weekends when I was in college, and then I moved to Nashville and I had that like kind of nest egg of money, which I put into a Jeep that I had to sell. And then I survived off that for a while, and I played Broadway downtown for like 3 months, and I realized that I would be stuck there forever if I didn't like figure it out. So it was fun. And then got a pub deal. And then I got out of that and kept my publishing and just built this. I finally figured out my sound as an artist, and I just went for it and unapologetically and got this ridiculous haircut and did this whole thing, and it just turned into what it is today. But it's been the funnest process. I truly, everything I write is like exactly who I am. It relates to the fans, and like the way you just said, like built it like from like a rock standpoint, everything like that. Like it was just day one, just hustling. And without CAA, my agency, like putting me in front of huge country acts and then those acts supporting me, and it just sort of like all falling into place. There's a lot of luck, but also hard work that goes into this. And like, I was that guy that would fly to California and play a show for $250 and lose $1,000 of the money that I just made off of this bigger show. And it was just like cycling money. It was like, I took my manager's credit cards and I would use those to get gas and stuff on the road. And then those would max out. And we were like borrowing shit like for years, man. We just kept cycling this. So it's super crazy. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's been really fun.
So wait, so going back, so did you actually do like a NACA showcase, and did you go, you did the whole thing?
Yeah.
Like, so were you doing
Connecticut, I think is the one that I showcased in Hartford.
Yeah.
Like the big showcase for that one. Yeah. I did a bunch of them, but Northeast was really big for me actually.
How, cause you went to school in Missouri, University of Missouri. So how did you figure out this? I mean, I went to school in the Northeast, so I remember these NACA acts coming through. How did you figure out, hey, let's get out of Missouri, University of Missouri, and go showcase at NACA?
There was like a thing, and it was called Sonic Bids. And you created an EPK, electronic press kit, on these things. And I just like shot one at Mizzou in college. And then I posted that on there, and you submit, you have to pay, they make you pay to submit your Sonic Bids EPK. So like, like $75 just to get people to watch it. And so like, you know, I was working for a cleaning lady business, which I was like a housekeeper. I was like cleaning toilets anyway. And so I had like a little bit of cash. And so I put it all into these things, and I did one. NACA is across the country. So I did one for like Montana, California, Northeast, whatever. Northeast one just was the one that worked out. That's the reason why it happened. Like, it was just the one that like called me back and we want to do a showcase. That's what happened. Then I did the showcase, and then it just went from there.
And were you doing original music, or was it mostly cover stuff at that time?
I was doing both, actually. It was pretty much split down the middle, 50-50. But the original music back then was awful.
Say that again. What was awful?
Original music back then was not very good.
I love it. And do you, I mean, was that what you were doing like basically every weekend when you were in college? Were you traveling and playing shows?
Well, especially my senior year, my voice major, I was a voice major at Mizzou, vocal performance, and then also business marketing major. And my marketing degree, the business school wouldn't have class on Fridays. And two of the guys in my band were also in the business school. So we were tech and in the same fraternity. So we were off Friday till Monday at like afternoon with classes. So we would leave Thursday, play the shows Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then come back to college on Monday.
Now, were you like a popular guy on campus? Did people think that was really cool? did they know what you were doing? Did you kind of have a buzz on campus, or were you a little invisible? Like, what was the reaction around town?
I mean, it worked out with the sorority girls. I don't know. My fiance just in the other room goes, "Oh my God."
The fact that, because you're a touring musician, you're a good-looking guy, it's like, it seems like it would be a cool thing around campus. Like, you know, you're traveling all the time.
It was cool. Like, you played, what I said, the sorority girl thing. Like, I played a lot of, like, events for the sororities because I was in a fraternity, but there were 36 fraternities on campus. Like, it's huge fraternity life and, like, sorority life. There's, I think, 14 sororities. And so, like we would do, like, if they had, like, weekends where, like, mom's weekend, or, like, their moms would come in or whatever, like, I'd be the guy with my group of guys in the kitchen playing a show for all the moms that came in town. So, like, a lot of sororities would have me come play, and that's really what I'm getting at with that. It was like you're the music guy. It just sort of happened that way.
Totally. So how do you meet your manager, Chris?
Were you prompted to ask that?
No, I wasn't prompted with anything. Why do you ask?
Shoot, man. Oh. So I moved right behind BMI.
Now I'm excited to hear this story. I wasn't prompted with anything.
That is amazing. I literally, like, no one's asked me that question, but that story is so funny to me. So, like, okay, here we go. I'll tell you the true story, too.
I want the truth here. Come on.
It's all the truth. It is. These aren't the quick answers. Basically, I moved in with a bunch of guys from Missouri and Illinois and places, and we had, like, one bedroom. It was a three-bedroom house with one bathroom, and we had bunk beds in it, and it was all right off Music Row on 14th Avenue South. And it looked like my fraternity never ended in college, and I just moved that to Nashville, basically. And we were out in the front yard. We had a couch out in the front lawn, like, fire pit in the back, like, when you, I don't think you're supposed to burn fires in Davidson County, like, that kind of stuff. And so we had this, like, awesome hang spot, and this guy would drive by in this, like, awesome truck, and everyone just be like, "What's up?" Like, whatever, like, that's it. And so one day, I go to Rippy's downtown to Broadway, and go up to the bar, and this guy's there, and I'm like, "What's up?" And he's like, "Dude," we're like, "Neighbor." Like, "Oh yeah, you're like my neighbor." Well, you never met. So we met at Rippy's. I was like, "Let's get a shot and take a shot." He's like, "So what do you do?" I'm like, "I'm an artist." I was like, "What do you do?" He's like, "I'm a manager," and he's managing Brantley Gilbert. So we're just sitting there talking. He's like, "Well, you know," and this was like, I was like, "You know, you moved to Nashville and you're just like," this is exactly what he said. He's like, "Well, you're not like skinny enough to be a skinny artist, but you're not fat enough to be a fat artist." And so he like said this when he was drinking to me. And I was like, "Fuck this guy." Sorry. But I was just like, "This guy is the worst." I was like, "Whatever." I was like, "You're an asshole." And so then the next like month of my life, I like was running miles and just like shredding weight. And so one day, like, I run by his house and he was on the porch, and he's like, I was like, "What's up, dude?" And I like pulled up my shirt and I just flipped him a bird and I was like, "What's up, man?" And like, cause I was like, "This guy ain't gonna," like, anybody that confronts me on something that I can't do, like, I do it. And I think from that moment on, it was just like this funny story. And then like, literally, we connected like right after that, after we're just like having this confrontation, basically, because we're such competitive people. And then we're like, "Let's go golf." We went golfing, and I played him a song in the truck on the way to golf, and he was like, "This is it. This is your sound. This is what you should be doing." And then we built this entire thing, and it was off sailing from there. So
it's funny, one of my best friends in the world, him and I met outside of a rehearsal for a show, and we got into a huge argument. We'd never met. We like bumped into each other about something. We got into a huge argument, and then we exchanged numbers over something, and then I became like his best friend. It's funny how that happens.
It's crazy, man. Like
so. Totally. So what were some of the first things that, you know, that a manager brought to the table? Or now that you teamed up with him, what were some of the early things that he was helping you out with? Or, you know, what value was he providing early on?
To be honest, like, he had every, you know, he had every connection you could possibly need. Obviously, if you're managing Brantley Gilbert and all these other people, like, and then he veered off, and him and I built our own thing. Like, we decided to just go do our, like, it's just us, like, and that was it. And I built a really good network of people just being in town, and same with him. And so combining basically both of our networks and our skill sets, I think the biggest thing that really kind of took off for me was just having that person in my life that, like, believed in me, and then also was gonna, like, fight the hard battles for me, where I could still play, like, the artist over here, and then have someone that, like, went down that rabbit hole and, like, fought and got things done. And it's just been, it's really important to have someone like that in your corner, when, especially when you're building things independently. And even now with the label, you need someone that's going to stand up for you. So it's amazing. It's an amazing relationship. He's my best man at my wedding. It's crazy. Yeah.
I love it. So how long have you been touring consistently before this COVID nonsense? How long have you been on the road?
Pretty heavy since the summer of 2016.
Yep. So at what point, you know, when you're hitting the road, at what point do you start to see real momentum pick up? Or was there a point where, you know, all of a sudden you started making money, or you started bringing on a stagehand or something? At what point did you start to see, you know, this is actually picking up steam and actually people are coming out to see me?
Fall of 2017, probably, because I did the Chase Rice tour for about a year, and yeah. His fan base is just so amazing. And yeah, it's just like people, like, you know, in fall of 2016, I opened up for Sam Hunt, and I opened up for Michael Ray's first headlining tour, and had all these amazing opportunities. But those fans that showed up early, they latch on to you, and then you watch it a year later and they're coming back to someone else's show, but to see you early. And that's where it really started picking up. And constantly staying on the road. I mean, like, honestly, like, without the COVID situation, like, that is how you can build diehard fans for the rest of your life. I'm at the point now where I've no number ones on country radio. I can tell you right now, I can name numerous people, which I'm not going to, that have numerous number ones, that if you put me in a venue across the street from them, I will sell more tickets.
Absolutely.
That's the thing about this whole industry that's confusing to me. But at the same time, like, I love country radio. I want to be big on country radio. I'm doing that right now, and I'm going to check that box, and we're going to play stadiums, because country radio really does give you that huge audience. But I had to do it the hard way, because, you know, when you want to own more of your own shit, you have to do it on your own, and it takes longer. And so, but I will say that, like, no matter what happens from this point, I have an amazing fan base, and I'm so thankful for, they show up. I don't even know how to explain these people. And it's, look, it's not even on a huge scale yet. Like, I can sell out a 2,000 person seater at a House of Blues. It took 5 years to get to me even to say that to you. I don't know if I've ever said that in an interview. Like, that's a real thing. Like, my state I'm in tour for my album, which is postponed and, like, moved, I will do that. And I will headline, and I will sell these all out and across the country. And I'll sit here and be like, if it all, like, ended tomorrow, like, that's really cool. Like, I'm so proud of just that alone, because it translates and it works. And, you know, but, like, when I want to sell out stadiums though. So we gotta keep going. Yeah.
But it's huge. I mean, I used to work at a House of Blues when I was in college. I was a stagehand at the Boston House of Blues, and I would see at the Boston House of Blues.
Dude, one of my favorite House of Blues, dude.
That's the best venue of that size.
Right next to Fenway.
Next to Fenway.
Dude, it's ridiculous. Oh my God. I have to send you like these awesome photos. Like, it's just me and the whole crowd singing my song, and I'm just standing in front of, like, I'm gonna fall into the, it's like, oh my God, man. I know exactly what I'm wearing. Like, I'm picturing it right now. Oh my God.
I love that. It is the best venue. Tim McKenna and the staff over there are incredible. They run an amazing ship. But it's incredible to see acts come in and play rooms like that, because the fans there feel like it's theirs. It hasn't gone out yet. It feels like the people who are there, there's an energy that's like, this is ours. And we're, you know, it hasn't been shared yet. And, you know, you have amazing shows in rooms like that. It's incredible. Oh,
they're the best, dude. I don't even know how to explain it. It's so crazy.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening, and hope you're enjoying the show. Some of you may know that I run an industry newsletter called the Nashville Briefing. Really takes you to the front row of everything happening in our industry. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to nashvillebriefing.com to subscribe. Also, if you're enjoying this show and specifically this episode, please feel free to give us a 5-star review on your podcast listening platform. Thanks so much. Now back to the show.
So did you see a lot of concerts growing up? Were you a big concert guy? Did you go to a lot of shows? And
I don't know if I was like the biggest concert guy, actually. I mean, I saw Rascal Flatts 14 times, I think. Keith Urban was up there too. And obviously, you know, my first concert was Backstreet Boys in St. Louis, which this is really crazy. My now fiance, we met in Columbia, South Carolina. I was out on the Luke Bryan tour, writing songs for Brett Young, like out with Brett Young. And we had an hour before bus call, met her at Columbia at a Tin Roof in Columbia, South Carolina. Now we're together, this whole thing, like life is crazy. She actually grew up 45 minutes from me her entire life. And our first concert that she went to and I went to was at Shea Fitz Arena or at the Kiel Center, whatever it's called back then, in downtown St. Louis, Backstreet Boys, the Millennium Album. We were
the both, same show. You both?
We were both there as kids. And then flashback, you know, 20 something years later, we meet at a bar in South Carolina. And like, how weird is that?
That is incredible. Wait, so because there's a great video that was in People where you were proposing to her. And by the way, it was right there. It was right there. And you know you have the one because she didn't even care about the stone.
She didn't even look at the ring.
I think that's a good sign. I do. But okay, so you're out on the road and you walk into a Tin Roof and you see this girl who you're like, oh, she's kind of cute. Like what? How does that interaction happen? How do you guys connect?
Well, my pickup line was basically like, "What can I get you a shot or something?" It was terrible. Right. I know she's listening right now.
Are you listening? Come say hi.
Who cares what you look like? Just say hi to the man. You're sitting here.
Can we?
You're snickering in the other room. I'm like, just say hi.
This is what I should have done. Is I should have had Fillmore's story of the first interaction, and then we could have heard yours and see if it lined up.
Back to back.
He said it all pretty right, I think.
Now, when he asked you for a shot, did you know? Like, were you like this guy? Funny haircut? Like what? Like what were you thinking?
I love the haircut. I was like, yes, please. I'll have Fireball.
An instant conversation there, fireworks right away.
Like, yeah, definitely. But you know, he deleted my comment on his Instagram, and then he didn't message me for like 6 months.
We don't
months.
Need to tell the man the whole thing.
Wait, what was the comment?
Well, do we tell him the full story?
Oh my god.
My roommate at the time, she like talked me into jumping the fence to go down to the tour buses. And then the security guard kicked us out. And then Tyler was like, yeah, we don't know these people. So then I commented on the picture. I was like, hey, thanks for denying us a great game of cornhole. And then he deleted the comment. Is this live?
I don't know.
No, we're not live, but I'm loving this. Wait, so, but he was like a touring musician. Were you thinking like I gotta keep in touch with this guy or like what?
Well, I had no idea who he was at the time, so I was like, it was a weird feeling. I just always thought about him like, oh my gosh, I know I'm gonna marry this guy. I know.
Really? That early
I was like, all right, I always thought about him like, oh, I just love him.
Because he was funny. Wow. He was charming. He held the door open.
Yeah, he held the door open. He bought me a Fireball shot.
I didn't hold the door. I definitely
okay. Last question, and then like, when do you reconnect? Like, how do you guys come back together?
He messaged me on Instagram go to a Saddlebags show in Savannah, Georgia. And I was like, no, I'm not gonna meet you in Savannah, Georgia. I was living in Columbia, South Carolina at the time.
I have no game. But
I was like, I tried. Yeah, nice try, but no. But it's so nice to talk to you. We can talk now. And he wouldn't give me his phone number for like 6 months. We talked on Instagram.
Look, if you listen,
no, that I get. I get that.
If you listen to the album and everything, like it's been a journey. Okay, like it's been a real thing. And so
this is. Parts of this are chronicalized on the album. there's a line about tin roof, me at tin roof. I mean, this is like
It's all real things. Yeah. Other Girl was the first song I wrote about her, and I also wrote Me Lately about her, but there's other songs in there about exes and stuff like that. So it's like this journey to get to this point in my life, and it's all chronicled on that album. That's why it's such a cool moment right now. It's like, it's literally the finish line of like, that part of my life is, let's go. And now we have the next part, and we'll tell the fans about the next thing. I'm excited. So that's crazy.
But then when he got to Tinder, if he comes up to me, he's like, hey, you're that girl. I'm like, what? I was like, I don't even know who you are.
There's a girl. I was like, that's the girl that tried to break down by the buses at the Luke Bryan bus, like when we were playing cornhole. I'm like, that's that girl.
I would never have done
that. Oh, you tried to play corn. You tried to break in first. And then you met at the tin roof.
Yeah.
Then I randomly went to that tin roof and she was there. I go, you're that girl that tried to break in by the buses. And then I was like, you want a shot?
But it was my roommate at the time because we had been drinking. And she's like, let's just do it. I'm like, I don't want to do that. She's like, come on, Paige. She was older. She's like, we used to do this all the time when I was your age. I'm like, okay. So she was like, let's just do it. And it was like a long, like a really steep hill. I was like, I really just don't feel like doing this. She's like, just
I love this story.
Yeah, so then we did it, and then we ran down this hill, and the security guard's like, are they with you? And they're like, no, we have no idea who these people are. And then so we get in the car with this random person, and then he's like, I'll drive you guys. We're like, okay, take us to Tin Roof. I'm sorry, this turned into me.
Oh, you're good. Sorry,
and then the car started going elsewhere. I'm like, sir, we need to go to Tin Roof. And then he finally turned around and went to Tin Roof. He should probably not have gotten in that car with that stranger.
It was weird.
Yeah, so long story short, we got to Tin Roof and they went to Tin Roof and he's like, hey, you're that girl. I'm like, I have no idea who you are, but hey.
I love this story. And then he convinced you to move to Nashville.
That story.
Say that again.
It's all abbreviated usually. Yeah, that's the full real
thing. Usually don't tell that story.
Guys, I'm honored. What, how, and then he convinced you to move to Nashville?
Yeah, so we were long distance for a year. I stayed in South Carolina. I was in school for cardiovascular sonography. And then I finished school. And then I got a job here in Nashville. And then I moved here.
Unbelievable. That is a great story. That is a great story.
Thank you.
Fantastic. I'm curious, do you jump in always on these? Like, is it like a thing? Or no, this is totally spontaneous?
I've never done it, yeah. This is our first.
This is my favorite.
It's your interview debut right now.
I've never had a spouse on an interview, and it's been a highlight, honestly. I love this.
All right, get out of here. I got one for you.
Great to see you. So tell me the story about Country Song. There's a story here about how with a label executive said something to you, and that, you know, inspired you to write Country Song. What's the story there?
So, as an independent artist, like obviously I'm polarizing a little bit, and the way I do my music, everything is slightly polarizing as well. I'm just trying to incorporate all my favorite sounds in the world and the way that I grew up, my influences. I'm trying to put it into my storytelling of my version of country music and what I believe it is. And so in this process, when you start beating the system that is Nashville.
I'm so sorry. I'm just thinking about how great that last moment was. Genuinely a highlight.
Release day. She's like looking at the camera. She's like, oh, my first interview. That was looking awesome.
Okay, I'm so sorry. That was so brilliant. Okay, I'm so sorry. I cut you off.
That was good, man. Honestly, dude, the whole story is basically like you're in that process of like meeting with all these record labels, and you always dreamed of having a record deal and all these things. And then out the gate, they're like, okay, well, we love this and we love what you're doing, like, but we want to do this differently. And it's like, but that's not what I do. Like, I'm so confused. Like, what? You haven't even signed me and you're already trying to change me. Like, that's a red flag in my opinion. And so then, like, I sent all this stuff and they're like, Slower is a hit. It's a smash. And so I was like, awesome. And then, like, can you send me a couple more? And I sent like 50 songs to some of the people that won't be named. And basically I get this like response back, like almost like sliding everything. It's like, can you just send me a country song? And I was like, I just sent you 50 country songs, so clearly you don't understand who I am as an artist. Second off, yeah, I'm going to send you a song called Country Song. And so I was at Buck Owens Palace in a green room, and I had my buddy, it was after, I think, the CMA Awards or whatever, Ebok flew out with us and hung out in the green room, and I was heated, and we wrote this song about everything I love about country music, and I was like, and we're going to call it Country Song. And so we wrote it in the green room there. And then the next day I had the day off and I went to an Easton Corbin concert in Anaheim, California, just to hang out with Easton. And in the garage, we opened up the back of the rental Tahoe that we had and we tracked the guitars for it when we were during, like while he was sound checking, we tracked the guitars for that song and those are still on the record. And it's recorded in Anaheim House of Blues in Anaheim in a parking garage. And yeah, and then I finished the demo and I sent it to him. I was like, here, this is a country song. And it was called Country Song on the MP3. And then I never spoke to the people that will never be named again. But
I was going to ask if you've had
ever got a response. It was just like that, what's up? And then it was done. And then I put it out and it became one of those live songs that people sing so loud and it's pretty crazy. So
that's awesome. And then your song that's about to go to radio, Nothing's Better. I love that hook. Something's better than, that line you always say, something's better than nothing. Something was nothing. Nothing's better.
Yeah.
Do you come in with that hook? Does someone come in with that hook? How do you guys write that song?
Well, you gotta be really, angry about an ex. So that helps. No, the hook was,
someone texting you for yelling at you for not playing cornhole or whatever, you know,
there it is. No, she wouldn't do that, but you know, other people. But yeah, it was just all from a real spot. And I think the Nothing's Better thing, just one of those, we wrote it in my buddy's kitchen 3 years ago, actually. So I've been waiting for this moment to find the right time to put it out. There's so many songs in the hopper that are over here that it's just timing for a lot of things. And I will say in the future, there's going to be consistent music happening so often. So I'm really like excited for that. Like I've already written an album too. So like we're already done with it. So
holy cow. Is this, because a lot of this record was already out prior, like country, like a lot of the songs were already out. Was this record recorded in quarantine at all? Any parts of it?
No, I actually turned this record in. I turned it in September of 2019. So, and then they started releasing pieces of it,
right,
to build to this moment. But in that time period, I already finished album two, and I've already tracked a bunch of stuff too. So it's already
in quarantine. Album two is like tracked and ready to go.
Yeah.
Holy cow! Well, we can't wait to hear it. So
it'll be a year.
I'm sure. It'll be a year. Yeah, yeah. It's like we just released the album. Let it live for a second. It's like, what do you want from me?
Hey, man, I'm ahead. As long as I stay ahead of it and just keep putting stuff out, it works out. So it's good.
Totally. I mean, are those your favorite artists, that the ones that are constantly putting out music? And
yeah,
because it keeps you engaged.
Sorry, my dog just ran in. I think it's so important, especially this day and age, to release music as fast as possible. And as long as it's good quality music, and I want to get back on that train. That's how I built my stuff independently, was putting out music at a fast pace and quicker than people would do at labels and stuff like that. And then Curb allowed me to put out music the same way and continue that path. Even when I went to radio, it was slower and everything like that. And so it's been fun releasing songs from this album. Instead of just dropping the album and having 18 songs get lost in the world, we allowed every song to live its little life till this moment. And now there's 5 new ones and there'll be a deluxe and we'll just keep rolling everything out. And
totally.
Yeah. It's just, it's a weird game trying to make sure that songs don't get lost in the shuffle, because you work so hard on just one song specifically. And even if it's not the radio single or it's the single for this or whatever, it doesn't mean that song isn't amazing. I wouldn't put it out otherwise. Or I wouldn't, they're all my babies. So it's like, you want them to see the light of day. So it's scary. You put out an album, it's an 18 song album, only 5 new songs, really, if you think about it. But for a lot of people, they'll look back on this as like, it was 18 songs that day, because a lot of people are just getting, you're consistently like building this thing. So it's a rebirth, but also those 5 songs, I'm still like worried, like, are someone going to miss one of those 5 songs? Cause we didn't like put it out on DSPs like separately so that people could live that moment and then move on to the next one. So it's like, oh, it's like you never want
to. It's funny how there's some of your favorite albums that you think about, you'll go back and you'll say, oh, I've been listening to the album for 10 years or however long. And then you'll realize, oh yeah, I've never actually heard that song. I've never taken the time to go listen to it. It's funny how that happens, because you get so sucked into what you love, and sometimes it's hard to.
You always skip from track 1 to 5. You're like, okay, I love these songs. And that's how you listen
to it. Yeah. And you think that's my favorite album. And then you're like, wait, I don't even know half the album. Are you a good judge of your work? Like, do you know if, when you write a song, if it's a good song or a special song? Or do you trust other people, like your manager? Like, if your manager says, this is the single, and you maybe disagree, will you trust his judgment? Or do you have a good sense of, you know, when you write a great song?
I think I have a great sense of a track record, I guess, would prove that my fan base believes in what the choices that I've made in those situations. But at the same time, like, without my manager and other people in my life having opinions and telling me what they think is the thing, I think things would be overlooked on my end. I wouldn't realize how great they are. I would love it, but I would maybe choose something different. And we'll use this as an example. Love That About You is one of my most streamed songs ever. I was actually not going to show anybody that song. I only showed it to my manager, and I was like, I don't know. And then in a meeting, he just pulls it out of left field and is like, this is what I think. And then everyone jumped on and it became like my biggest song. So having people in your life that have opinions and choose things as well, it's really just a compromising game, because like they're there for a reason. I have these people to like, I'm so attached and so close to all this that sometimes you need people to pull you away from it and help you make better decisions for that stuff. And it's worked out really well having that team to do that. So even with Curb and everyone over there, like, it's been really helpful having people do that. So
absolutely. Okay, let's go back for a quick minute, because I'm curious. I was reading that you joined choir because you wanted an extra recess, which I've never heard of. Maybe that might be a thing. I've never even heard of that. That was the thing that happened? If you joined choir, you ended up having an extra recess back in the day?
I don't even know where they slid it. It was kind of weird. Like, you had, like, there was, like, lunch, and then there was recess, and then, like, I don't know if it was like a study, like, I don't know how they like set it up, but like, it was basically like, I remember it vividly, like, you join the choir, you get a free recess. And I was like, I'd love to be in choir. And then it just like went from there. And then it was fifth grade. I had like that free recess the entire time. I was like, you guys enjoy study all. I'm going to recess.
I mean, so did you, cause you have, even live, your voice is incredible. Your voice is really pure. And it's always great. Did you ever take like formal lessons, or did you learn technique when you were singing choir and in school? Did you ever take proper lessons?
Not really. I mean, choir was really my sustained thing. I don't really feel like I was like in the lesson game that much until college, when I got my scholarship for voice, and then I really honed in on those skills. And like, a lot of natural ability, something no different than sports growing up and everything like that, just the natural ability of things. But then you hone in, then you kind of like create your craft a little differently once you can kind of focus on those things. But that didn't happen until later in my life, probably.
Were you, like, in high school, were you the music guy, but you also played sports? Like, did you think then that you were going to go into music, or was it still unclear?
I was very unclear. I thought I was going to play sports in college, actually. I was very much a jock. I played every sport. And I was very active, you know, like select baseball. I was at the top of my game in baseball. I was on varsity soccer, everything. Like, I did everything. Wrestling. I'm very focused on excelling at what's in front of me. And then when I randomly got coaxed into doing the musical, I was Bye Bye Birdie, Conrad Birdie and Bye Bye Birdie the musical. And then
that's a great part, that's a big part,
and then
the telephone hour and all,
dude. And then it just shifted, man. And it's crazy. So it's crazy how life throws curves at you, and then you just gotta roll with it. And it's been a ride. But I apply all the things I learned in sports growing up to the way that I run my business and do everything, like the competitive nature and the drive that I have, and the non-quitter mentality is really helpful, especially being a country artist this day and age. So,
absolutely. Do you still like musicals at all? Do you ever listen? Do you ever throw on a cast album?
I love Wicked. I will say that, like, it's
Stephen Schwartz, amazing shit.
It's absolutely amazing. It will always be my favorite thing in the world, probably. So yeah,
it's incredible. I saw it when it first opened with the original cast, and I saw it maybe again 2 years ago.
With the original cast, yeah. Oh my god,
amazing! I was really young. You can't forget it.
No, it's crazy, man. And what's her face is like the voice of
A Demon's Elle?
God,
is Elsa Frozen, right? Yeah.
She's literally amazing. Like, it's crazy how good she is.
Incredible. And her and Christina Chenoweth and the two of them. And then Joel Grey, who's a Broadway legend, is the wizard on the original recording.
The whole thing, dude, it's one of my favorite I don't know. It's hard for me. That just changed my life. That's really when I first got into it, though, because I did my first musical, and then it was like a thing. I was like, Wicked's my thing, and it has been since. Like, it still holds up. It stands the test of time for me.
It's weird how even that recording, if you go back, like, because there's a lot of musical recordings that sound very dated, even that have been recorded after Wicked, and that one sounds really timeless for some reason. Like, it still sounds good. It's weird.
It's weird because I can actually, like, speak to that, because I was in the car the other day and my sister was just playing the album, playing that the songs back to back, like, from that original recording. I'm sitting there, I'm like, this is outrageous how good this is.
It still bumps.
Yeah, really does.
Now I'll ask how, are you a Hamilton fan? Have you seen Hamilton Disney Plus yet?
My fiance is, and everyone in the world is. I actually haven't dove into it because I think during quarantine and all this stuff, my focuses have kind of shifted to, like, really just, I've been hunkering down on work and stuff. And it's not an excuse, but also I haven't watched it yet. I don't know why. I need to take the time and, like, enjoy it. I just haven't, like, been in the headspace to be that person right now. But, like, I'm sure I'm going to love it. So
you have to watch it. I can tell you're going to love it. I don't even know you. I'm just like, you're going to be obsessed with it for a month.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Fillmore, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been a blast. This has been one of the most memorable podcasts I've ever done, and I absolutely loved it. Thanks for taking the time. The record is coming out 2021. No, I'm kidding. The record is out today.
Today.
Go listen to it. The radio single is coming out. Any special moments or any special memories or anything significant that stands out to you when you think about the process of this record?
This podcast right here. No, this has been actually awesome, dude. It's one of my favorite ones as well. I'm not even lying. Even like my fiance jumping in, like, this is crazy. So I think I'm on a high today, this natural high from putting out music that you get, and it's so cool. So I don't know. Nothing's gonna top this day so far, and you're a part of this day. I mean, this is crazy. So thank you,
man. I'm honored. I love to hear it. Stay safe out there, and I can't wait till we get to see a show and we get to see you back on the stage.
Yes, and when we get together one day in real life outside of COVID, we're gonna get a beer and hang out, and we're gonna go to a House of Blues show, and we're gonna watch Wicked there. It's gonna be crazy.
I love it. Wicked at the House of Blues. What a dream. I would love that. Great to see you, buddy. Talk to you soon. Yeah. There you have it, episode 25, Fillmore. You know that line from, Step Brothers, where they're like, do we just become best friends? I don't know. Maybe we did, maybe we didn't. Who knows? But I gotta tell you, I'm a big Fillmore fan. I was a big Fillmore fan before, but I mean, I'm a bigger Fillmore fan now. I had so much fun talking with them. Thanks for listening. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to our newsletter at nashvillebriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in. We have new episodes out every single Tuesday, so be on the lookout. And that's it. Episode 25. There you go. Quarter life crisis podcast episode. That's it. That's all we've got. We'll see you next time. Have a great week. Bye.